Well, good afternoon, KGOU listeners, and welcome to the latest edition of the KGOU Readers Club. I'm your host, KGOU Managing Editor Logan Layden. Today, we highlight the book 100 Things to Do in Oklahoma City Before You Die. It's from Reedy Press. It's the third edition. It was just released. I have the authors with me for the next hour. That would be Jeff Provine and Dennis Spillman. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
That's been great.
Well, welcome to the show. Want to get into it here right at the beginning. This is the third edition of 100 Things to Do in Oklahoma City Before You Die. It's the third edition, and you two worked on this together, but not in the previous editions, right? Can you tell me a little bit about what's different about this edition versus ones that have come out previously?
Sure. Jeff, you want to start?
Yeah. So I've been working with Reedy Press previously on the Secret Oklahoma City book, which was a little bit more in depth on history and strange things around town. And then they said that they were needing to do a new edition since you want to update things to do every once in a while. Places closed, places open, you know, new things to do. And they said, hey, could you put together a 100 things list? And I immediately thought of Dennis, which we've worked on numerous projects together, and his Uncovering Oklahoma already would have had 100 things on it to begin with. So I said, hey, as long as I can work with Dennis on this, I'm all game. And they were excited for it. So the rest is history.
And Dennis, what was your role in this? I mean, how closely did you two work together bringing this together?
I mean, we worked together generating the list of 100 things to do. We each kind of split it up into, you know, writing about some of our favorite places that we personally been to or knew, had intimate knowledge about. And just kind of took turns writing it, and we just kind of like a Google Doc that we just shared and just chipped away at it over the course of about 6 months.
Yeah, which you think, oh, 100 things, that's a lot. But our first brainstorming list, we had, what, like 180 or something?
Yeah, there was a lot.
There's a lot to do.
We had to significantly narrow down our list just to kind of really try to get to some of the best of the best and some things that I think that also are just worthy of some extra love and attention.
When was the last time, with this being the third edition and it was just released this year in 2024, when did the previous ones, how long has it been since?
The second edition came out back in 2019, so right before the pandemic.
Right. Big changes there just to begin with. Yeah. And then the first one goes back to like 2014 or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Okay, so this is all within the last 10 years or so. The first edition wasn't back in like 1980 or something.
Right.
I think, you know, a lot of people, you know, I grew up in Oklahoma. It's kind of my whole world, and I'm really proud of, you know, Oklahoma City and the surrounding communities. But you do, you know, when you hear people nationally talk about Oklahoma City, it's they do kind of refer to it as, you know, we're part of flyover country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's not Oklahoma City isn't a place where you want to be. There's nothing, not a lot to do. Well, I hear it a lot of times when I'm listening to sports commentary about how the Thunder can't get big free agent signings in Oklahoma City because they don't want to live in Oklahoma City. Well, they are wrong.
Mm-hmm. I agree. They are missing out.
Talk a little bit about that. Oklahoma City is with each year that goes by, there's more and more to sort of be proud of as the city where we all live.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Which the book always breaks down into categories, which the first one, food and drink, you know, the Oklahoma City food scene. I mean, I think our initial brainstorm list, that was the biggest bulk. Like, we could do just 100 awesome places to eat in Oklahoma City easily. I think we could do a 300 places to eat in Oklahoma City, but
yeah, very
I
easy.
Like food. So.
Yeah.
I was talking to my sister the other day who lives in Albuquerque, and she was saying, oh, you know, maybe someday we'll pass through. And like, well, you got to eat here, 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 and here. So, you know, plan for at least a couple of days. And she said, wow, when did Oklahoma City get so many cool places to eat?
When did it? And that's one thing, one of the things I wanted to ask you all about here at the top was just the change in Oklahoma City over the course of the last couple of decades, 20 or 30 years or so. Really, it seems like the Oklahoma City bombing was sort of a demarcation point, and then you look post-bombing and see what's happened with Bricktown, of course, getting the NBA franchise, and it's been it is so different now than it was, you know, 30 or 40 years ago. I don't know. I mean, I could be wrong. If you tried to put together this book back in like 1978, you might struggle to find 100 things, but you've you've had to narrow it down to those 100 things. Talk a little bit, if you can, about the sort of evolution of Oklahoma City over the last couple of decades.
I'll start on this one because I started my travel show Uncovering Oklahoma back in 2009. So that's 15 years ago now. And back then, there was things to do in Oklahoma City. You kind of had to know where to look for. And I was really motivated to like show people like, hey, there's this cool shop here or this fun place to eat. And I wanted to make a travel show that was mostly geared towards teens and young adults because, you know, that's what I was at the time. And also that was kind of the demographic of people that were always complaining there's nothing to do, there's nothing to do. Mm-hmm. But I felt like a lot of people just have their blinders on, and I still feel like to an extent that they still exist today where people just have their blinders on and just don't realize just all the many wonderful, spectacular things. And I have certainly seen a growth, especially with the food scene. I mean, I remember David Mayer Holt making a comment about, you know, back in his day when he was younger, like, you know, you didn't have, like, a chef was just some teenager, you know, just working a day job. But now it's like, you know, these James Beard winners here, then they're on these food competition shows, like, here in Oklahoma City. And I think that just kind of, like, blows people in mind because that wasn't like that like 10 years ago.
No, not even just a handful of years ago. I've lived in Oklahoma City a long time, over 20 years now, and I felt a bit ashamed as I went through the book here. There's some of these things I recognize, some of them I don't, and I should know better about my own city, especially when it comes to the food. And I spent a lot of time on that section. We don't, you know, in public radio here, we're not supposed to be promoting certain businesses, but I'm not going to be able to help myself over this hour for a place like Florence's, which is life-changing chicken, folks. I've never actually had the yam fried chicken because I can't stop eating just the regular original version. But this is a James Beard award-winning place, and you'll see the lady herself still, I believe, at least she was there last time I was there a few months ago, still holding down the fort there in Florence's.
Yeah, we really wanted to try to showcase a really diverse selection of Oklahoma's food scene. You know, people, Cattlemen's is not in the book. You know, like we talk about that in the beginning of a book because we want to show that Oklahoma City is so much more than, you know, onion burgers and steak. Like there are some really, really great stuff, very diverse food scene, all sorts of different cultures and cuisines. So we really try to showcase just kind of the eclectic nature and the melting pot that Oklahoma City is in the food scene.
Yeah, it's continuing to grow. One of the things that stuck out to me, part of the food section there, which is the first part of the book, you talk a little bit about Black Walnut and Gray Sweater, which is in the apartment complex that I live in. It's down on the first floor. I've lived there for 2 years, and I've never been there. I've never done anything more than smell it. But these are like really renowned places, and you wouldn't necessarily know. So if you're coming to Oklahoma City, well, this is a pretty good guide to have along with you. For my partner and myself, it's Tuesday night. I'm bored. What are we going to do? I don't know. What are we going to do? Well, I'll just shut my eyes and open to a page and put my finger down and we'll see something. It's a lot more than people think.
That's right. You got to get the inspiration, right? They always talk about the New Yorkers who have never been to the Statue of Liberty. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always there. So, you know, take that step today, right? Why not get out and do something cool?
Yeah. Well, I do. We're going to talk more about the book and more about Oklahoma City, but I do want to try to get to know you authors a little bit more for the listeners here and the process of this and how it came about and why you're doing it and who you are. So let's start. Dennis, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do outside of writing these books, and what inspired you to do it?
Yeah, sure. So as I was kind of talked about earlier, I started a travel show called Uncovering Oklahoma. It was show kind of geared towards teens and young adults to show that, you know, Oklahoma does have a lot of fun and exciting things to do. Sometimes you just need a helping hand to be guided and know where to look. I do freelance nowadays. I do freelance videography and I do a bunch of other shows. I've kind of rebranded Uncovering Oklahoma to Spiel Venture because I kind of want to get people to travel, you know, outside of the state. Maybe people, you know, outside of Oklahoma to like kind of look, you know, sometimes people see the name Oklahoma and like, oh, I'm never going to go there. So I'm hoping with the rebranding, people are like paying a little bit more attention, like the stories. Cause like how often do we watch food travel shows, like places, the states that we don't live in, you know, but they have such like unique experiences and stories. So that's kind of what I'm capitalizing on. I've been shifting, pivoting and doing all that. But mostly I just like making videos. I love introducing people to new things, getting people to try different things, teach people new skills. I know a lot of people have anxiety about trying new things. So like on my videos, I kind of walk people through and kind of give people like the behind the scenes and like make it not so much about me as a host, make it more about the place and kind of like what their story is like and what the experience is like. So people will be like, be at ease when they go visit a place for the first time.
Yes, indeed. And that goes beyond just Oklahoma City. Obviously, this book is just about, and it's about Oklahoma City specifically. You make that clear at the beginning of the book. I mean, you don't even go outside the city limits.
Correct. Yeah. The previous editions did go have a few things outside of the city limits, especially the first edition had even more stuff outside the city limits. But I think Oklahoma City has grown enough that we don't need to fish for surrounding cities to make a top 100 list.
Yes, indeed. And like we talked about even before we started, you could do one. You could probably do one for Norman. You could do one for any number of the outlying communities as well. Jeff, how about you? What brings you to this? What do you do in your normal day-to-day life beyond contributing to books like these?
So, well, I'm a professor of English over at Oklahoma City Community College. And that's kept me pretty busy. But outside of teaching, I do lots of research on folklore and paranormal stories here in Oklahoma. So I've published several collections, Haunted Oklahoma, Haunted Oklahoma City, Haunted Norman. My first was Campus Ghosts of Norman, Oklahoma, which is where I got started doing ghost tours. So I'd done study abroad in England where every little town has a ghost tour. And I thought, okay, well, you know, maybe we might have one or two stories in Oklahoma. And we are jam-packed. I heard three new ones this week.
Even right, we're on the OU campus right now. I remember being a student here, some of the ghost stories over at the library and in the stacks and stuff, which you're probably familiar with, those tales. And go a little bit south over there to a Noble and Kendall's Restaurant. Obviously, there's some stories there as well. We do a program called How Curious here on KGOU that's hosted by Rachel Hopkin. I need to put you in touch with her. These are the exact kind of stories that we do. In fact, we did one about Kendall's just a few months ago. So more to come on that. We're revamping that show and bringing it back in September of this year. But I was surprised by how many examples of things just in this book here are things that we're actually looking at for that as well, including Hippopotamus for Christmas and the origins of that story in the Oklahoma City Zoo. So as far as the process of the book, I wanted to ask you about, there's 100 things to do in Oklahoma City before you die here. Did you all like do all of them as you were putting this together?
I believe between us we've done
everything. Yeah, between the two of us, we've done everything.
I haven't eaten at all these places, which I'm very excited to try quite a few of them.
A lot of these places, you know, either I've interviewed them for my show, so I had like, you know, this intimate knowledge of, you know, how they worked and their story, so I was able to incorporate a lot of research I've done throughout the years and put it into the book, which I think kind of sped up my research time because I already knew a whole bunch of people and places. I just kind of like pulled the transcripts and kind of formatted it for the book, and like, here we go.
What are some of the things out of the 100 of the 100 things to do that sort of stick out for you? I wonder if you have any kind of favorites yourself. We'll start with Jeff here.
One of my favorites is going up to Will Rogers Gardens and looking at the fairy houses that started popping up during lockdown, which I remember vividly reading about this while I was locked down. Just, you know, weird things happening. People started putting up photos of, I went to the Will Rogers Gardens just to go get some fresh air, and there was this tiny fairy house. And then I went back next week, and there was another one. And it became kind of a phenomenon just for that little portion of Oklahoma City, people going by and seeing these things. And for weeks became a big mystery, and until it was one of the workers there who didn't quite have as much to do since everything was locked down. So he was just putting up little fairy houses because he thought it was great. And it was great. People got really excited about it. And to this day, Will Rogers Gardens shows off. They've got almost 100 of them, dozens and dozens of little fairy houses hidden all through the trees. And
What form do those take? When you talk about fairy houses, it's they're doors painted on like tree stumps.
Yeah, it's great because you know, fairies, there's lots of variations, so you can have a lot of variation in whatever houses. Just make which scraps of wood you have on hand, so you could paint directly on the wood stump that you got there, or you could make a little doorway out of, you know, popsicle sticks, basically, and then a little window and a little flower box to go along with it, and then start another one over here. And a lot of cottage architecture, but then, you know, I meant, why not a little Art Deco for another one? You know, it's anything goes when you're in fey world. So,
yeah, it's really neat. Yeah, and it's really detailed on these doors too, because they're, you know, they're not just painted on the trees. They are three dimensional. You know, they are structured and built out. So it's really just fun little, just neat little exciting thing as you're walking around. He's like, oh, hey, there's another one, and there's another one. Mm-hmm.
Very nice. What about you? Anything in particular out of the 100 that you chose here that is particularly special to you that you enjoy the most?
I think a lot of people don't truly understand how special the Oklahoma City Museum of Art is. They bring in some really fabulous exhibitions that are more often than not, Oklahoma City is one of the few places it'll tour at in North America, you know, and there's a lot of reasons and a lot of behind the scenes stories for that. But because it's just Oklahoma, and people sometimes forget, Oklahoma City is the 20th largest, most populate state in the U.S. So, you know, it feels kind of small, but there's a lot of people here. But also geographically, it's pretty unique because a lot of the museums are not in competition with each other, so touring exhibitions kind of like that, because sometimes when you have a touring exhibition, they may not like, oh, that so-and-so like just down the street has parts of this from this collection, or so Oklahoma City doesn't have that issue, so we're able to get a lot of unique exhibitions up there.
We're discussing the book 100 Things to Do in Oklahoma City Before You Die with authors Jeff Provine and Dennis Spielman. I'm Logan Layden, and this is the KGOU Readers Club. More to come after a short break. The KGOU Readers Club, talking about the book 100 Things to Do in Oklahoma City Before You Die. I'm Logan Layden, managing editor for KGOU, and I have authors Jeff Provine and Dennis Spielman with me as we continue our conversation. Well, Dennis, what is your sort of connection to Oklahoma City? You both seem really passionate about the city. If I remember, as I was going through the book, one or the other, whoever wrote the line, called it the best downtown anywhere. Now, we're obviously a little biased here, but what makes you care about the city so much?
I think that reason I care about the city so much is it's moldable and it's growing. It feels like you can actually be part of the changes and make an impact. Whereas some other major cities, if you're not in, you're not in.
Same question over to you, Jeff. What makes Oklahoma City so special to you?
Well, I mean, being native Oklahoman for sure helps. And but outside of that, I've always been fascinated by just how weird it is. So Oklahoma's, you know, such a, it's not quite the South, it's not quite Midwest, you know, it's where does it fit? And I think that's really represented by the Capitol here, right? Which wasn't even the initial Capitol. So you can get into the story about stealing the seal from Guthrie. And then as we go through history, you can just look downtown and see crooked streets because people in 1889 couldn't agree about which map they wanted to use. You can look at the skyline and you see when oil prices were high. We got the towers from the 30s and the towers from the 70s and the towers from the 2000s. And the inflow of different populations, right? We have a huge Vietnamese population, so we have amazing pho and really cool, in addition to restaurants, supermarkets and shops, mm-hmm. and just so many cool people from so many different places, Deep Deuce and the good legacy of the Deep Second from the Jazz Age. I mean, every corner of Oklahoma City has got something so fascinating that if you aren't looking for it, you might miss it.
Well, and I've even noticed, you know, when we're hiring people to be reporters and things here at the station, we do nationwide search. We'll have people who come here to work from lots of different places in the country. And there seems to be a tendency for people to sort of fall in love with this area, with Oklahoma City, once they come here and are able to experience it themselves. You don't have, you know, everybody complains about traffic and everything, but it's nothing compared to some of the other major cities in America. And so I've always felt like Oklahoma City had a nice balance of, yeah, you get everything that you'd want from a big city experience without some of the hassles. It's not such a pain to live here. And that includes, you know, you break the book up into several sections. We've talked about some of the food, but even for like arts and culture, whether it's ballet or theater, not something that somebody not from here would think about Oklahoma City before they came here, but it's a pretty vibrant situation as far as the arts in Oklahoma City, if you could speak to that.
Yeah, Oklahoma City has a vibrant art scene. There's a lot of different organizations out there just doing fantastic work. Unfortunately, there's, you know, always that issue of, you know, sometimes there's not enough money around for things. So a lot of arts organizations especially with the theater troupes, kind of tour and go to different venues. So it's a little bit difficult to, if you're trying to like, well, let's go watch a play tonight. You kind of got to do a little bit of research in advance. It's not something like you can just go to like, well, let's go down to Broadway and just watch whatever's happening. You kind of got to know a few things to find some of the really great stuff.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which, I mean, there may not be money for it, but people want to do it and mm-hmm. they're going to find a way to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, OKC Improv, right?
They got their own space
before,
and, yeah.
and now they're amazing, mm-hmm. Which they've always been amazing. Now they just have a little bit more credence behind that.
Yeah. I've been working with them, was following them since like, you know, back in their original Ghost Light Theater days. And now they got their own space in the Plaza District, and they're pulling crowds every weekend, and it's really exciting. So they're and it kind of goes back into like, you can do and start something here in Oklahoma City, and I think people will come to them if you're able to get the word out.
Oh yeah, Dead Center Film Festival. There's mm-hmm. another one that just people liked watching movies and wanted to have a film festival, and now it's internationally ranked.
Yeah.
Bringing in really big people trying to get their movie seen.
Yeah, still one of the top 50 film festivals you have to submit to. I think that number might actually be up higher, but it's in the top 50 for sure. I know that.
Well, there are a couple of things, and you just mentioned it there, as far as the film industry here in Oklahoma. Some of the things that have even changed pretty dramatically since even the first edition of this book would have come out, mm-hmm. you know, 10 years ago, and the film industry is one of them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure, yeah, which we've gotten a little bit of support from legislature. OCCC's nationally ranked, internationally ranked, since they started including Canadian schools, too, on producing techs, and, like, we're cheap to film in, and we have mm-hmm. a lot of really cool stuff, which kind of being jammed here in the middle, you know, you go a little bit to the southeast and you got bayous and swamps, you go out west and you got plateaus, all the trees you can want up near Tulsa, like, yeah, you can any
desert
anything you want. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, if you go up far enough northwest, you'll see road runners and sand dunes, mm-hmm. And you go down to the southwest and or the southeast and you've got bear and alligator, mm-hmm. We haven't gotten too used to it yet. I think for people like in LA, they're used to seeing film sets, and this is no big deal. It's old hat for them, but we still get excited. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, we've got a current blockbuster now, Twisters movie that had a big part of its filming here in Oklahoma City.
Yeah,
right?
It had a big giant outdoor sound stage that they were filming at, and that was people were so excited about seeing that go up and like, ooh, what are they filming in here? And they were like doing a lot of stunt work there for the Twister movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we still talk about Twister, the first one, and go up to Wichita and check out the museum. And I remember when they were in Guthrie and rented this building. And
Yeah, back in what, like probably 1994, 1995, something like that. The film industry, yes, another thing that has changed since the first edition of this book came out is the, well, the beer scene in Oklahoma City.
How.
There's been a lot of changes. If you want to talk, I mean, it's a pretty good part of the book here, and there's a nice list of various different options. And, you know, we have all these different craft beer houses and locally produced beer that 10 years ago it just wasn't the case. It's blowing up. All over the place.
Yeah, that's, again, a lot of things to legislation change because, you know, this industry couldn't exist, you know, less than 10 years ago or something like that? It's still a relatively young industry here in Oklahoma. And then there's some more progress being made towards adding more distilleries now, which is I'm really excited about. But there's only like 3 or 4 distilleries in the entire state of Oklahoma. So I think that's probably going to be where going to be some new growth in that front. But when writing the book, we couldn't just pick just one brewery to like highlight. We just kind of like, well, there's this brewery trail program. So let's just highlight that. And then we'll list all the breweries that exist. And cause everyone's so different. And I just recommend like, do a little bit of research on, you know, their styles that they're known for, what's special about them, and just go out and try different ones and see what you like.
Yeah, like you were saying a little earlier with, you know, certain cities, you got stuff in the know, and, like, that's the way you do it. Like, you cook pizza this way here. But, you know, with laws changing, anybody could do it, and a lot of people had different ideas. Nobody would question them on it, and they'd you know, go for it. Make cider in Oklahoma. Why not?
Well, yeah, and you talked about the distilleries. There still aren't a whole lot. I don't know that there are any in Oklahoma City itself.
There's one, Woodworks Distillery.
Okay.
And in Guthrie, there's Prairie Wolf, and then there's one over, I want to say there's also one in Tulsa, and I know there's one more in Hoachatown Distillery.
Hoachatown,
yes.
I've been there.
So those are the only distilleries I know of off the top of my head, so...
Yeah, but I'm sure, you know, more to come as we've seen with the beer scene. And there's something that caters to everyone. There's one of the kind of underwriting themes. There are a few of them in the book here. There's something for everybody. No matter what your age is, for little kid, family friendly, or if you, you know, have a group of friends in who are older and you want to, you know, go on one of these beer tours or explore that. And also seasonal things. I mean, we're coming up here. We're in the middle of summer now, which is a great time to, there's lots of these places that are having, you know, specific summer related events. But as we get into the fall and the Halloween season, that's something that is in particular, there's some really specific things in the book about what to do when it comes to spooky sort of things, if you want to talk about that.
Well, I think it's great all year round, but I'm kind of a spooky guy. But the Museum of Osteology is unbelievable. I've been there, I don't know, 6 or 7 times, and I'd be eager to go back. They just added some new cool stuff. Which, talking about Oklahoma City being different, you know, there's nothing like this anywhere else, almost in the world. All started just from one guy who had a cool process. He liked cleaning skeletons, and then lots of hunters, so they want to get their stuff cleaned, and then people start donating things and building up a collection, and people want to come see it. And a good friend of ours came into town. She's a curator in a museum in Philadelphia and wanted to see it, and she was just blown away at how well it was constructed and how much understanding can come out of it. And they've got it. So if you're a 4-year-old, you can come look at it. They've got coloring sheets. If you're PhD master's level, you can really dig deep into the animals organized by their classes and like how different types of locomotion work. It's fantastic.
Yeah, they even do like special like murder mystery date nights and where you kind of like have to solve kind of like some sort of like CSI type stuff. So there's a lot of fun. It's a bit more fun than you would think it would be for being a bunch of bones.
Yeah, I was. It's funny you mentioned that. I was there just recently. I talked about our show, How Curious, and we're doing an episode that's focusing on the Museum of Osteology. And I went with our host down there to capture some audio. Part of the reason why, and I guess the general public won't get this same experience, because you go into the museum there and they've got all the different exhibits and everything in the gift shop, and it's a cool experience. And like you say, they do specialized events. But for this, I was able to get behind the scenes and get access to what they actually do back there. And part of the reason I went is because she was having a hard time being able to be there, because it's not the greatest thing you've ever smelled.
It's true.
Whenever you go back there. But it was absolutely fascinating to get that access and see, like you say, I mean, they've got exotic animals, and these aren't replicas. These are the real thing, and some of them are, you know, like a century old or something like that, that another museum is moving beyond, and so they come to acquire them. But they'll take whatever skeletons people bring in, and the process that they go through, remember, you know, they've got these big vats of liquid, I'm sure it's some kind of acid. And then they've got this room in the back where they've got millions of flesh-eating beetles that they let go to town on the skeletons to clean them up before they're ready for exhibit.
Yeah, and there's like a display up front where they're actually showing you some of the bugs working on the bones.
Yeah, it's it's really, really fascinating. But again, you might. I had the smell in my nostrils for a couple of days after I went and had that that visit. But it's just one of those things that you just don't, people that aren't from Oklahoma City wouldn't expect to find here. And it's not crowded. There's not a line out the door. You can go there anytime and have a pretty easy experience.
Yeah, just like the Pigeon Museum as well. That's
yep.
Yeah, that was life-changing. I thought pigeons were a waste of time, and went there and learned they're war heroes. They've been alongside humans for thousands of years.
It's another story that we've done about the Pigeon Museum. And if you could speak to that a little bit more, you just wouldn't think of it. Why would the Pigeon Museum be in Oklahoma City? Why?
Yeah, it has to be somewhere, right? Yeah, and right. Why not Oklahoma City? I mean, we're centrally located, so it's a lot easier to transport the animals that you're needing. They're funded by pigeon racing, of course. And so lots of big pockets with pigeon racing. Mike Tyson, for example. And, you build up this really cool collection and you want to show it off. And again, we're centrally located, so it's easy to get to.
Yeah, also, Oklahoma's unique geography really allows for some unique bird migration as well, which I've learned from the folks at the Sam Noble Museum as well. Because of the migration and everything, sometimes you kind of get unique off variants and breeding of different birds too. So I don't know if that's played anything with the Pigeon Museum, but I do know that's just kind of an interesting fun fact about our geographic location.
Yes, and they have fancy pigeons, right?
That's right. You get, if you are very fortunate, you want to go there on a nice weather day, and they'll have their pigeons out sunning, the pigeons that have been retired and live there at the museum, and you get to pet them and see the Hercules pigeons that are gigantic and all kinds of different feather constructs. It's
as you go through the book, and there's 100 things, and they're numbered 1 through 100, and you're going to see a lot of things that, I mean, obviously, the Oklahoma State Fair, right? So that's something that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Museum of Art. But it's a good mix of things that are sort of obvious out there, you know, Bricktown and, taking the river tours down there, the water taxi. Things that do sort of stand out as obvious things if you were just somebody randomly coming to Oklahoma City to do, but then things that are more obscure as well. One thing that I, would love to do would be to get out to the Orr family farm.
Mm-hmm.
It's a place I've heard of before, but never been to, and didn't have an idea until I read this book of some of the interesting things that you can do out there. Like,
yeah, I love doing the corn maze in the fall.
Uh-huh.
Yep. The giant jumping blob. That's just something out of movies right there. But yeah. It's another example where you just have a good idea and you go out and do it and people love it.
When I like food and I like getting to the restaurants, several here that I haven't been to that I need to go to, the ones that I have been to in here, you're absolutely right. They do stand out and they need to be talked about in a book and highlighted. Also, you know, on occasion, go out to Remington Park, to the casino out there. Obviously horse racing, but it's not the only thing that they race out there. And I know that everybody knows about ostriches and zebras.
Yeah, the exotic animal racing was something I'd heard legends about, and I didn't believe them because I'd be like, you don't actually do that. And I saw pictures of it, and like, well, that's somewhere else, and they just said it was Remington. And then obviously it's real. Like, why would you question it? Yeah. But yeah, it's a great charity event. They invite lots of people in. So it's always a different kind of set of what's racing based on people's availabilities. Like maybe the camel racers can't make it this year, but extra ostrich people can come in, zebras, just things that people race all over the world because you can, and bring them here and check it out.
And we're discussing the book 100 Things to Do in Oklahoma City Before You Die with authors Jeff Provine and Dennis Spielman. I'm Logan Layden, managing editor for KGOU, and this is the KGOU Readers Club. More to come from us as we continue our conversation after a short break. We're back again with the KGOU Readers Club talking about the book 100 Things to Do in Oklahoma City Before You Die. I'm Logan Layden, KGOU Managing Editor, and I have authors Jeff Provine and Dennis Spielman with me. We could do a program on each and every one of the 100 things to do here, but some of them do stand out as just a bit unusual. One of them was the Wheeler Ferris Wheel. Which, if I'll let you all talk about that a little bit. If you've seen some classic movies, you've probably seen this Ferris wheel, but you've seen it out in California, Santa Monica, right? But now it's here.
Yeah,
can talk about
that. Yeah, a little bit? It's that's so crazy. Yeah, and it's one of those things like, you know, again, we're putting together this book. There are some things that I think are very obvious. You know, like, oh, everybody knows about that. It's so popular. But then I run into people, Norman around the metro is like, they don't realize we have a Ferris wheel along the river. And let alone that it's, you know, this big Route 66 iconic Ferris wheel that was brought up to Oklahoma City because they got like a bigger one to replace it with. But there's a lot of stuff like that. And it's just like, you know, I always try to keep in mind that not everybody knows everything, you know, because again, I'm connected with a lot of journalists and those types of people that are always kind of in the know, but like not everyone's connected like I am. So I always try to scale back and like what I think is common to me is may not be common to everybody else. And we try to have kind of an eclectic bunch. So that way, if you're like new to Oklahoma City, this is like the perfect gift. Like if you are trying to maybe recruit somebody and like, I don't know if I want to come to Oklahoma City. Like if you're a recruiter, give them that book. And I was like, all right, sign me up. I'll come transfer to Oklahoma City. You know, that's kind of like what I kind of try to go for with the book was like, you know, to like get people to come here to visit or come here to stay. This is a great welcome gift. Or maybe people that are like, you know what, I want to take off my blinders and open myself up to some new experiences.
Yeah, which, I mean, moving here, I mean, the wheel did, so why not? Which, you know, they always talk about, you know, London Bridge isn't in London anymore. Well, the Santa Monica Ferris wheel isn't in Santa Monica anymore. It's still on Route 66, though, which is pretty cool.
It's in Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we've talked about, you know, the sort of renaissance of Oklahoma City, and there's been much, you know, there's been books written about it. But we're far from done in Oklahoma City. One of the big exciting things happening right now is, well, the Olympic Games are now underway. Well, here in a few years, we're going to be having Olympic events ourselves, at least it appears that way, if the Los Angeles City Council approves the venue plan that's already in place. But we're so excited about it. I mean, that's just another part of this evolution. And the river sport facility is something that you also highlight in this book. It's an Olympic training area?
I think since day one, mm-hmm. they've been training, like, I guess maybe even before it was officially open to the public. I bet people were training there for Olympic sports. You know, it's always been a unique and special location too, be able to do that. You know, it's kind of weird. It's like you can go surfing and inland and like here in the middle of nowhere, you know, and there's a place you can learn to surf and ski here.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing engineering, which somebody gets a good idea, we follow through on it, and then we end up with nationally ranked whitewater stuff that we can shift around depending on how much intensity people want.
Yeah. And the organization, they're a nonprofit organization too, so they do a lot of education, a lot of outreach, a lot of work with the schools, you know, teaching kids all sorts of valuable skills. So it's really, you feel good about going there too.
And, you know, we're excited about the possibility of the Olympics. It's just amazing to look back over the last few decades. I can remember I grew up in McAllister and coming up for a field trip in fourth grade to see the Capitol building. And it was just a few weeks after the Oklahoma City bombing. In fact, it was before they had demolished the building. And so as the bus was coming over, you could look out and see the big, you know, hole in the side of the building. And at that time, I mean, that was 1995, not even 30 years ago. And Bricktown was nothing.
Nothing. You did not go to Bricktown. It was
well, there was no
scary.
Reason to.
Yeah, unless you wanted to get stabbed.
Right. And look at it now. I mean, the water tower, you highlight several places close to Bricktown, Brickopolis, mm-hmm. Right? So even if you're coming to Oklahoma City and you're just staying in a hotel in the downtown area, there's plenty to see and there's plenty highlighted in this book from just that area alone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. On foot, you could stay a week easily and never run out of things to do.
And we have the streetcars now, mm-hmm. Which is, I guess, a bit of a callback to the early days of the city.
Yeah, it's interesting how things circle back like that.
Yeah, I wish the Oklahoma City would be kind of be like Atlanta, where they had, you know, a streetcar or some sort of tram directly from the airport to downtown. Mm. I think Embark, start saving up some money and get that happening, you know?
Yeah, I mean, maybe that'll be one of the additions down the road. Ride the whole railway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've talked a lot about, you know, restaurants and, you know, something, you know, Bricktown, the art, entertainment. There's a lot even within the city itself that's kind of more outdoorsy that I think, it's been pretty much lost on me, the ability to kayak, to hike, to bike mm-hmm. in wilderness areas, which might not even for people who've been here a long time stand out as something that you'd think of as even being a possibility to do here in the city.
The Stinchcomb Wildlife Refuge is absolutely gorgeous. It's one of my favorite places to go kayaking. In fact, I was there just recently, my wife and some friends, and it's just so gorgeous. And it's a long Route 66. So, and after a little ways, like, you'll get away from the city and the traffic and you'll just be out there in nature, and it's so serene. And it's like one of those things, like, people don't realize this exists here in Oklahoma City, especially Martin Nature Park. Again, that's one of those things, like, if you live in that area, maybe in one of those apartments or work in that hospital, you might know about it, but a lot of people don't realize that we have this really cool outdoor nature hike that you can do, and there's a really cool nature center there as well. Again, we're talking about the bike rides. You know, there is this really big weekly Thursday bike ride, just a group of people, and they just, it's free, and they just all meet together at Mesta Park, and then you just take this like 10-mile, multi-mile route, stopping at a few different places. That's a lot of fun. The full moon bike rides that the Myriad Garden does,
mm-hmm.
Ride OKC, all their architectural tours, their cookie tours, their beer tours that they do.
And a ghost tour.
Yeah, and a ghost tour. There's a lot of outdoor stuff, too. You know, of course, we're talking about river sport. Just absolutely gorgeous. A lot of fun stuff to do. And there's some stuff that didn't make it in the book, but there's some really great Shiloh I recently learned about. There's a lot of fun stuff, too.
Yeah, like the routes around the rivers, like mm-hmm. we mentioned it. But, I mean, just biking along the river is something 10 years ago people would never imagine doing, mm-hmm. but it's gorgeous.
Well, it's a good resource. I if people out there are familiar with Reddit, I get on there quite a bit, and you'll in like the Oklahoma City subreddit, you'll often see people, hey, I've switched jobs. I'm about to move to Oklahoma City. What is there to do there? I really like hiking and biking. And you see a lot of responses like, well, this isn't going to be the city for you. That's untrue. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm usually also on those comments setting the facts straight.
Yes. Yes. Good. Yeah. That you're in here. I mean, there is such a wide variety of things to do and a lot to be proud of in Oklahoma City. And it's going to continue to grow. It seems like it's only going to continue to be the case that there over time will be more and more growth here and probably more and more things to do. And it's going to become larger and larger and more of a magnet for more arts, entertainment, food scene. Do you foresee that? Will we need a fourth edition of this at some point?
Oh, I absolutely. Yeah. I mean, times change and we do foster really cool ideas and restaurants that never would be able to start in other places, but we can make it happen.
Yeah, I'm really curious and excited to see what happens in 5 years. I've been kind of like seeing some whispers of things here and there, so it's always exciting to see what's growing, what's popping up.
You both plan to remain here? Is this where you're from? This is where you're going to stay into the future?
Foreseeable future, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, same here. My wife works at OU, so, we'll see what happens.
Yes, indeed. Well, thanks for joining us today. The book, again, is 100 Things to Do in Oklahoma City Before You Die. It's got a little bucket on the front here. You guys have experienced all of these. You mentioned it just a few minutes ago, Dennis. I did want to address this here toward the end, because it's 100 things. It's not 101, it's not 112. This must have been difficult to pare these down. As far as the process of putting this together, were there things you wish were on the list that you couldn't get to? How did you make these decisions, basically?
Sometimes it was easy, like, for example, in some of the food places, if they were a James Beard award-winning, they went in the restaurant section. Like, it was kind of an automatic gimme, especially if it was unique and special. If it was something like, especially if it was, like, unique to Oklahoma City as well, that was, you know, that went in there. Some of the stuff, like, and again, we couldn't cram in everything. There's things like, oh, man, I probably wish, like, all right, maybe next edition. And some things we kind of had to, like, cheat, and I'm using air quotes.
Fudge. There we go.
A little bit where we can, like, say multiple things, like, you know, shopping in the Plaza District, you know?
Right,
and then
right.
We list a whole bunch of multiple things together. So we kind of get a little crafty with that. So, I mean, honestly, there's technically speaking probably more than 100 individual things to do in the book. But, you know, publishers says you got to keep it to 100. So,
yeah, and this is from Reedy Press, right? That's out of St. Louis?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, and you can buy the book at local bookstores. You can find the book at local bookstores such as
Full Circle.
Yeah, Full Circle. Mm-hmm. Second Story Books.
Best of Books up in Edmond.
Best of Books in Edmond. Literati Press also has copies, and Factory Obscura also has copies. Barnes and Noble does have copies. So a lot. Craig's Curious Emporium also has copies. So you'll be able to find it locally.
Yeah, we're here too. So, you know, just find us on social media. Say, hey, I'm going to be over here. I want to get my book signed. Like, well, let's meet up. And we're not just people from New York City.
No, and speaking of that, you do still have some. This book was recently released, this edition of it. You've got some events coming up?
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll be down at Kindle's doing signing for one of their authors or artist nights. We'll be doing a signing on Friday at the first Friday for the Paseo up at Literati Press.
That's August 2nd.
On August 2nd. And then following Saturday, we'll be over at
Full Circle Bookstore, Saturday, August 3rd, and that's at 3 p.m.
So well, that's just this week.
Nobody knows more than you two about what to do around Oklahoma City. So if anybody has any questions, those events or your opportunity, or again, reaching out to you via social media, which you're both active on.
Yeah,
right?
I'm pretty active on everything. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for joining me today, and we'll end it there. But I assume as Oklahoma City continues to grow, there will be a need to probably do some additions to this in the future. So thank you for joining us. That is Jeff Provine, Dennis Spielman. They are the authors of 100 Things to Do in Oklahoma City Before You Die. It's the third edition, which was just recently released. And appreciate you being here on the Reader's Club with us.
Thank you for having us.
That was a blast.
I'm Logan Layden. Join us next month for the KGOU Reader's Club.